Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. Fooling the People.
Hello. One of President Abe Lincoln's most memorable statements about the government of the United States was to the effect that it is able to fool all of the people some of the time, and some of the people all of the time, but that it can't hope to fool all of the people all of the time. He made this statement as an argument for honesty in government. Since the government can't fool all the people all of the time, it is bound to lose its credibility if it tries. Well, that was 140 years ago, and things really were quite different in the United States at that time. For one thing, there was no television. For another thing, there were virtually no Jews. Even without Jews, we had plenty of liars, of course. Plenty of men who aspired to fool as many people as they could for as long as necessary. These men who aspired to deceive others tended to go into the business of selling used horses, or into the ministry, or journalism, or the practice of law, or to run for public office. But for the most part, Lincoln's observation about the pitfalls of trying to fool all the people all the time held true, and the amount of damage done by these deceptive men remained within reasonable bounds. As I said, that was 140 years ago, and things have changed in America. One of the most depressing aspects of the situation in America today is the extent to which the government and the controlled media, collaborating with one another, are able to deceive most of the people all the time. In fact, if Lincoln were making his observation about deceiving people today, it would sound something like this. The government can't fool all of the people all the time, but in a democracy, that's not necessary. In a democracy, all the government has to do is fool most of the people most of the time. And if the controlled media and the government are working together, that's easy. Since Bill Clinton became president, the government and the mass media have been collaborating to an unprecedented degree. In past programs, I've given you a number of examples of this government and media deceit, especially with regard to race. Actually, where the media are concerned, the deceit works at two levels. First, there is the false portrayal of reality and the pushing of certain destructive ideas by the entertainment media. Consider the casting in films, for example, of heroes and villains. The Jews who own Hollywood and the television industry have some very strong notions about what a villain should look like. He definitely should be blonde. Blue or gray or green eyes are a definite plus. The more he fits the Aryan ideal the Germans were fond of 60 years ago, the better. And come to think of it, it will be good if he also has just a trace of a German accent. Or if a German accent doesn't fit the story, a Southern accent will do. Think about all of the films you've seen with villains who fit that casting model. Amazing, isn't it? And as for heroes, the Jews in Hollywood have never met a black film character they didn't admire. Compare the number of black directors of the Central Intelligence Agency, black generals, black presidents of the United States, black rocket scientists or black brain surgeons, or brilliant black computer hackers you've seen in Hollywood films, with the number you've seen in real life. Is there a discrepancy there? Then obviously it's because our racist society has held blacks back. At least, that's what the Jews would like the viewers of their films to believe. By chance, I happened to view a film last night called Kiss the Girls, a very forgettable, very unexceptional 1997 film produced by Paramount, which is owned by Sumner Redstone's Viacom Corporation. The screenplay, written by David Klass, is about serial killers and sexual deviants who kidnap girls and keep them locked up in their basements. Although there are several weirdos in the film, the principal weirdo, the one who kidnaps the heroine and keeps her locked in his basement with several other women, is a blonde. The hero is a black detective who also has a doctorate in psychology and has published widely read research papers in psychology. He also just happens to be an expert in pharmacology, who is able to recognize certain obscure drug effects which trained white doctors can't. When he introduces himself to one white female doctor, her immediate response is, "Yes, I've read your work." This black savant detective thinks circles around all of the white cops in the film, of course, most of whom have a sort of southern cracker attitude. And of course, the white heroine in the film, a real feminist naturally, just can't keep her hands off the black hero. As I said, this is a very forgettable, very unremarkable film, but it is typical of thousands of others with the same distortion of racial reality. And really, this sort of racial casting is deliberate. It is carefully planned. It is intended to implant certain ideas in the subconscious minds of white viewers. It is intended to change their self-image and their opinion of blacks and their attitudes toward racial mixing and interracial sex. Jews Sumner Redstone and David Klass know exactly what they're doing, and they fool most of their viewers most of the time. But the deception doesn't stop with entertainment. It extends to the news. On earlier programs, I've discussed the way in which the news media deliberately misrepresent interracial crime. I devoted a program to a detailed examination of the way the news media deliberately emphasized and exaggerated the egregiousness of the killing of a black ex-convict in Jasper, Texas, who was dragged behind a pickup truck by three white ex-convicts. I pointed out that the news media carefully avoided mentioning the fact that the black victim was a convicted criminal who had spent time in prison. I pointed out that the white man who was being tried, John King, had acquired his intense hatred of blacks when he was himself imprisoned with blacks and exposed to sexual attacks by them. The news media portrayed the black victim as a choir boy, and they implied that John King was born with his completely baseless hatred of blacks because that's just the way southern rural whites are. White racism is sort of an original sin that we all must do penance for. Most of all, in that program, I contrasted the enormous news coverage given to the trial of John King for the Jasper killing, making it the number one national news story for weeks on end, while a trial taking place at exactly the same time in a Denver courtroom where a mestizo was being tried for his part in the abduction, brutal gang rape, unspeakable sexual torture, and murder of a 14-year-old white girl, Brandy Duval, by members of a mestizo gang, the Bloods, was totally blacked out. It was not mentioned even once in the national news. In another program, I contrasted the news coverage of the shooting of a convicted black drug dealer and his girlfriend by a white soldier, James Burmeister, in Fayetteville, North Carolina, in December 1995, with the gang initiation murder last August of two pretty young white women, Tracy Lambert and Susan Moore, in Fayetteville, by members of the black and mestizo Crips gang. The shooting of the black drug dealer and his girlfriend was spotlighted and given national news coverage for weeks, while the gang initiation murder of the two white girls was totally blacked out. Please note the two distinct ways in which the public is fooled by this deceptive coverage. In the first way, there is the emphasis on news which fits the propaganda themes of the Jewish media bosses, and the blackout, or at least de-emphasis of news which doesn't fit. For the news which fits, they cut out the politicians and the Christian ministers and put them in front of the television cameras to lecture us on the evils of white racism and the need to silence the haters like me and to enact new hate crime legislation. And you never hear the news which doesn't fit, such as the murder of Brandy Duvall or Tracy Lambert or Susan Moore. The second way in which they fool the public is to distort the news they do report. For example, not mentioning that one of the blacks shot by James Burmeister in Fayetteville was a drug dealer just out of prison on a drug conviction. And not mentioning that the black, James Byrd, dragged behind a truck in Jasper last summer was also an ex-convict. They want to present the slain blacks to the public as paragons of virtue, bright and useful citizens whose lives were brutally snuffed out by hateful, racist whites. They're doing the same sort of distortion of the news to make it fit in the case of the recent school shootings at Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado. Perhaps you remember that when I first spoke about the Colorado shootings a little over a month ago, I pointed out that the media deliberately were trying to create the impression in the minds of the public that the two boys who did the shooting were racists deliberately targeting blacks, and that they were neo-Nazis who spoke German to each other and chose Adolf Hitler's birthday for the shooting. I reported that the day after the shooting, newscaster Tom Brokaw interviewed for the NBC Nightly News exactly one parent of the 13 slain students, and that was the father of the one black who was shot. Brokaw didn't tell us that only one black was shot, of course, but he spoke only of this one black victim. He spoke of none of the 12 white victims. He deliberately prolonged the false impression that most of the victims were black. He and other media spokesmen also continued to hint that the boys were neo-Nazis, even though they knew that one of the boys, Dylan Klebold, was a Jew. They didn't say anything about Klebold's Jewishness to the public, of course. Once the media bosses had planted the idea in the minds of the public that the two killers were racists and neo-Nazis, the subsequent revelation that all except one of the victims were white didn't change this impression. Preachers and politicians were still giving us tearful little sermons about ending the hate in connection with what happened at Columbine High School. Guilt-stricken white women were still becoming hysterical for the television cameras and babbling about how hate and racism were responsible. Jewish organizations such as the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit used the confusion as an opportunity to push for their pet project, which is censoring the Internet to halt the propagation of what they define as hate. Well, one bit of news which Tom Brokaw and the other network spokesman forgot to mention was what the Columbine killers talked about on the Internet. One would think that it would be wonderful grist for the Jewish media mill, showing the public the racist ravings on the Internet of the two neo-Nazi killers. But Brokaw and the others were silent on the subject. A little digging, however, actually just scanning the New York Times website, was enough to turn up the following material from Eric Harris's website, and I quote, "You know what I hate," Harris wrote, "racism. Don't let me catch you making fun of someone just because they are a different color," end quote. Harris also wrote that people who don't like, quote, "blacks, Asians, Mexicans, or people from any other country or race besides white American," should, quote, "have their arms ripped off and be burned." All the indications are that the killers, far from being the politically incorrect independent thinkers the Jewish media would have us believe they were, actually were strict conformists to the Jewish party line on racial matters. Despite this reality, of a Jewish killer and a partner who raved on the internet about wanting to rip the arms off racists, the Jewish media bosses were able to use the Columbine High School tragedy to fool a substantial part of the public into believing that the two killers were white racists and neo-Nazis. They were able to fool the public because they already had fooled the public so often in the past that they had the public conditioned to accept anything which fit the notion that white racists and neo-Nazis are dangerous and are likely to kill their neighbors, and that when someone does kill his neighbors, the chances are that he is a white racist or a neo-Nazi. That's why we need more laws to keep guns out of the hands of white racists and to keep neo-Nazis off the internet. One can imagine the Jews and the Anti-Defamation League rubbing their hands and laughing among themselves at how easy it has been to fool most of the people in this matter. And they're still busy keeping the people fooled about the Colorado shootings. Dozens of Jewish publications still are commenting about these shootings, and every one of them is deliberately deceptive. An example that I have in front of me now is the May 24th issue of the Jerusalem Report, which attempts to use the shootings to build public support for censoring the internet. Without ever mentioning Klebold's Jewishness or the politically correct tone of Harris's anti-racist website, the Jerusalem Report refers to, quote, the racist and Nazi undertones of the shootings and suggests that they may have been inspired by extremist internet sites such as that of my organization, the National Alliance. That sort of breathtakingly brazen lying is what the Jews proudly call chutzpah. If one reads more of the ravings on Eric Harris's website, it becomes clear that he had a badly impaired grip on reality. He apparently had watched so much television that he really couldn't distinguish between normal social behavior in the real world and the sort of sociopathic behavior portrayed by the Jews on television in thousands of films. Harris babbles on narcissistically about killing anybody who won't let him do whatever he likes. Quote, my belief is that if I say something, it goes. I am the law. If you don't like it, you die. If I don't like you, or I don't like what you want me to do, you die. End quote. Another area where most of the American people have been fooled deliberately and massively by the media is the nature and character of Bill Clinton. I think that I already have made my opinion of the man clear in earlier broadcasts, but my opinion doesn't jibe with the image of Clinton presented to the public by the Jewish media. Recently, however, a ray of light was cast on the subject by the publication of the book All Too Human by George Stephanopoulos, a former senior White House advisor and one of Clinton's closest personal confidants. Stephanopoulos himself is a pretty sick puppy, not unlike the other liberal nutcases Clinton is surrounded by in the White House. But Clinton's behavior during the Monica Lewinsky scandal was too much even for Stephanopoulos, and he quit. Now he's written a book about what Clinton is really like at a personal level, and it makes interesting reading. In fact, Clinton, as described by Stephanopoulos, sounds a lot like Columbine High School killer Eric Harris. One of my favorite Clinton quotes from All Too Human is, quote, I believe in killing people who try to hurt you. There are many more of the sayings of Chairman Bill in the book, but that one really sums it up. And since Stephanopoulos spilled the beans, other present and former insiders and friends of Bill are coming out of the closet. One of them, newspaper reporter Walter Erickson, is now retired, but he used to cover Clinton when the latter was the governor of Arkansas. He says, and I quote, only an idiot would buy the public persona of Bill Clinton. He is an incredibly profane individual. He is now and always has been an angry man who wants to inflict as much pain as possible on his enemies. End quote. Only an idiot. Well, I guess that includes a great many Americans. When the Jews realized many years ago that Bill Clinton could become a useful tool for them, they decided to fool the American people as to what sort of man he is, and they have succeeded in keeping most of them fooled most of the time. Clinton, of course, has made this deception easy for them because he is himself an extraordinarily skillful liar and actor. He is very manipulative, and he is very careful to put on his false face whenever he is on camera. The American public saw only a few brief glimpses of his real personality when he gave a video-recorded deposition to Ken Starr's prosecution team last year. But those who know him personally have seen everything. They all report that Clinton habitually curses like a sailor, has temper tantrums when he doesn't get his way, and raves about wanting to kill people. One White House staffer reports that during the impeachment investigation by Ken Starr, Clinton demanded at a White House staff meeting that the IRS should audit everyone on Starr's team. Several staff members told Clinton that wasn't a good idea. Clinton became enraged. The staff member reports, and I quote, "He slammed his fist down on the table and said, I can do any goddamn thing I want. I'm President of the United States. I take care of my friends and I fuck with my enemies. That's the way it is. Anybody who doesn't like it can take a hike." End quote. Pardon my language, but I wanted to give you an exact quote. The principal difference between Bill Clinton and Eric Harris, it seems, is that Harris only had a shotgun, while Clinton has cruise missiles and cluster bombs. Which brings us to another area where the Jewish media have been successful in keeping most of the American people fooled, and that's Mr. Clinton's murderous war against the Serbs. The media have lied about every aspect of the war, about the reasons for beginning the war, about what the Serbs were doing to the Albanians and why, about the American conduct of the bombing campaign, about the effects of the war on the Serb people, and just about everything else. And again, they have succeeded in fooling most of the people. The facts about the war are leaking out, but they're not getting to most of the people. Most of the people don't get any national or international news which doesn't come from a network television program, and that means that the Jews are able to keep most of them fooled all the time. In a democracy, that's more than good enough. I want to share with you some of these facts about the war against Serbia, which have not been getting to most of the American people, but I'll have to postpone that until next week. Why don't you get a few friends who are interested in learning what's really going on in this war to listen with you? I'll try to make it interesting for them. Thanks for being with me again today.